Good morning. Hello, this is Pat Rodwell from the Unaganaguna Project, and it's Saturday the 1st of March 2025, and I'm here with Amanda to record an oral history for the project. Amanda, could you introduce yourself, your year of birth, and where you are at the moment?
Okay, my name is Amanda Nisirakon. I was born in 1968. And I live in a village called Barrow upon Soar, which is near Loughborough in Leicestershire.
Okay, thank you. Can you start by just telling me a bit about you and your family, where they're from, anything that you'd like to tell me generally about them?
Okay. Well, I come originally from Monaghan in, obviously in Ireland. I was a family of 10 children, and I am number 9. So my brothers and sisters, obviously, are all. I have one younger sister, Carol, who actually lives in Bedford. She's a deputy principal in a school in Bedford here in England. All older brothers and sisters. There was a 7-year gap between me and my next older brother. My mother and father. My father actually was from County Monaghan, out in the countryside, and my mother actually came from Cavan, and they met. Actually, they were both, the major employer at Monaghan at the time, like in the sort of late 40s, early 50s, was the St. Avon Psychiatric Hospital, and they both met there when they were like 19, 20. Got married and then settled in Monaghan town, had 10 children. My mother was, as happened in them days, was pregnant a lot more than 10 times, but yeah, they had 10 kids, and as I said, I was number 9, so 6 boys and 4 girls. So we lived in Monaghan. We were, even though they're both from the countryside, we were like town. We lived in just on the outskirts of the town in a new housing estate, Tully. And initially it was just a 3-bedroomed house. So 6 boys in one room, 3 in each the bed. My 2 elder sisters in our small box room, the back room as it was called. And I remember up until I was about 6, sleeping in a single bed with my younger sister in the corner of my parents' room. And then we built an extension, a bedroom built downstairs. The new room, which is still known as, all these years later, that was our 4th bedroom, so I moved down there.
What was it like being part of a large family?
It was, well, of course, I didn't know any different. It was wonderful in so many ways because there was always people around. There was always a lot of noise, even though, like, my older brothers and sisters largely emigrated at some point. I do remember, like, in the sort of 70s, all of my brothers coming to live in London at one point at various junctures, and my second oldest sister, Detty, coming. My oldest sister, Maura, really was a bit more of sort of a home bird and did go away for a short period, moved to Dublin for 2 weeks, but didn't like it and wanted to come home. So that was that. It was odd because I knew I had some older brothers and sisters, but wasn't too sure who they were at one point, when I was very young. I remember my appendix out when I was like 6 and getting sent stuff, cards and stuff from me, and thinking, and it was like, I don't know who these are. My sister Detty had sent over chocolates. I was like, who's Detty? Because it was just, because, you forget so many things. But, yeah, so it was, certainly when we all sort of got together, times of Christmas, I remember, it was always just a bit chaotic. And then my mother's sister Eileen used to come, and there'd be like 13 of us Christmas Day, literally. Well, we couldn't all fit around the table. They used to put the old twin tub at the edge of the table, and myself and my younger sister would sit at that.
That was a twin tub washing machine got put in.
Really at the top of that because it was the right level for the table. So it was when I look back on it now, like, and I think of my poor mother, in terms of, because, you know, it was very, she was very sort of ordered that, like, you know, once, you know, in terms of food times and, you know, when everything, you know, when dinner would be finished, you would dinner at 1 o'clock, and, you know, that it would, all the dishes would have to be, you know, washed and put away, and the house was hoovered and dusted every day, and the fire was cleaned out, and, you know, the beds were made. And so, yeah, that was it was very much, I mean, the boys didn't do anything, of course. It was all the girls that did all that type of graft. So, yeah, it was. But now, like, you can really appreciate now, like, that, well, you know, that I'm much older, and, you know, having that sort of ongoing and enduring relationship, like, with my brothers and sisters. And, in fact, my oldest brother and my oldest sister were my godparents, because I think it just got to the point, like, that, you know, there was just who else are we going to sort of ask, type of thing. So, and then my second oldest brother and second oldest sister are godparents then to my younger sister. So I see very much my oldest brother now is 70 and my oldest sister now is 72, that they have very much a parental role, because both my parents have passed now. Yeah. So that is, you know, that's wonderful, like, and so, but yeah, we've always had, you know, you hear about families, you know, that would fall out and such hasn't spoken to the brothers, you know, for 20 years. A wee joke, oh my god, wouldn't that be wonderful if we didn't talk to each other? You know, very much, yeah, but it was a very traditional sort of household, you know, in lots of ways as well, because, yeah, the boys did very little. And, you know, also, you know, my mother was, because I came from, you know, Monaghan, which is in Ulster, but, you know, obviously is in public. And my mother's family, they were wealthier than us Protestants from Cavan. And very, yeah. So then when my mother married my mother was like only 21 and he was 19. So her family disowned her essentially because of that. And then, you know, she went on to have like 10 children, which in that, I think, in from their sort of perspective, was just like, you don't do that. Like, that's a sort of a Catholic sort of, you know.
So your father's family were Catholic?
My father's family were Catholic. So my mother converted. And so that was, yeah, we didn't have a relationship with my mother's family, except for my Auntie Eileen, who still lived in County Cavan. I was aware of these people and vaguely remember a visit of like one of my mother's other sisters, Auntie Minnie, but she lived in England with her husband and child. God, that was sometime, that must have been in the 80s, but it was like there was no sort of, you know, when my mother's parents passed away, like she was never told about that, even though they just lived like up there, the road essentially. So that was like, you know, quite strange. And I remember the time that I think I was about 8 or 9 when I realized that my mother was born a Protestant. It was just such a shock.
Yes.
Because not, you know, I look back on it now, of course, why would it be? I mean, you know, it's ridiculous. But it was just like, because of, you know, where we, I guess, grew up and whatever, and there was, and I always went to like, a convent and stuff like that, and there was this sort of like, oh, they're like, you know, completely different type of people to us. So yeah, we didn't really have, but you know, with my father's family then, you know, we were very, because my grandmother, his mother was still alive, and you know, a lot of sort of like, you know, with my cousins and everything, and all still lived in and around County Monaghan. My father came from, you know, a townland called Carrickrow down in near Emmyvale town. So we used to go there on our holidays, mm-hmm. 5 miles away. But God, it just felt like another world, because our house was like in the top of this like really long sort of lane, which is the top of a hill. There was no running water. There was no internal, you know, plumbing, and there was no toilet inside or anything like that. And it was just like another sort of, it was wonderful. It was like another world to go to.
Was religion and church important in your house?
We went to Mass every Sunday. But actually, my mother was a great Catholic. My father, he would drop us off in the car, go and park the car, and then come and stand in the back of the chapel and leave during communion. And he wasn't interested in praying and whatever. So, but for her, I think, and they say a lot, you know, this about converts, very much. I remember making my first communion and making my confirmation. So it was important in that sense, and you know, I was going out to the convent or whatever. But yeah, it was, I think, maybe because it was forced on us, not forced on us in a lot of ways, but you know, like going to a convent and some of the nonsense, when I look back and I think about, you know, the things that they would say, and then you know, this concept that my mother, you know, was a Protestant, because we'd sort of like led to believe, not that they were, I used to think that, you know, they were not devil worshippers, but actually that they believed in some sort of something that wasn't God. But of course, it's all the same. And it wasn't until, I'm going to be honest with you, it wasn't until my children, I have two sons, Rory and Ushing. Rory was born in 2001, Ushing was born here like in 2004. And they went to National School, primary school here. And it was a Church of England school in our village. And that I realised it was the exact same. I mean, you know, I'm embarrassed to say that, but that's the truth, because that's, I mean, when I think of it, it just, yeah, ridiculous. So I would say from a cultural point of view, it was very important because, you know, we identified like as Irish Roman Catholics. And then because, you know, of what was going on, like just across the border, and you know, my family were very sort of conscious of that, and you know, a Republican, and you know, supporter, you know, 32 county Irish Republican, all of that, that very so from that point of view, because when you turned on the news, it looked like it was very much versus, you know, Catholic versus Protestant, because you would get like elements of, you know, the unionist side, you know, would talk about negative stuff, you know, about like, you know, Pope and, you know, papists and, you know, all this sort of in Catholics. So when you're thinking, so you sort of felt attacked from that perspective. But yeah, I mean, you know, I was in the Legion of Mary at one stage. I don't know why, bizarrely. But that was just a very short period. That was, I think it was about 7 or 8, because there was some, you know, one of my friends like down the road, they were very sort of religious and very involved in lots of different things. And for me, it was just a wee bit of a social thing. We'd go on a Friday night, say a few prayers, you get some buns, and yeah, have a nice time.
Would you still, would you count yourself as a Catholic now?
I would say culturally, I would identify as being an Irish Catholic, but no, from a religious point of view, absolutely not. I have no truck whatsoever with any form of organised religion, because, you know, I've seen the sort of, you know, the detriment and the harm, both from, you know, in terms of what, you know, like what my mother went through and stuff like that. And then what, you know, some of the things when I look back on in terms of that were going on that we were just, you were aware of, you know, when I hear a lot now about these sort of abuses within the church, we all knew that it was always sort of there, it was unspoken about, but and you know, the control, and when I look back to, you know, how the nuns, they treated us and spoke to us. I remember going to see, I think it was the film about, you know, the Magdalen laundries, and the way the nuns spoke to those girls was the exact way that they spoke to, you know, when I was at, they spoke to us at school. And it turned out then one of my aunts, like, you know, on my father's side, she then had been in a laundry and her child taken away from her. And so that was very, my grandmother, my father's mother, was very, she was very old school. Like, she was born like in the late 1800s. And yeah, like the church and, you know, the priest and all of that, like, was just, you couldn't say anything against any of them. So now both of my children made their first communion. And I remember we went when because you know you had to they because they weren't like a Catholic school or anything here, that they did the youngest fella, we went to mass because you had to, like, for a certain number of Sundays, and then there used to be a wee communion type of school, or you know, sessions like afterwards, like for those making their first communion. This is my youngest lad, because my eldest fellow made his communion in Ireland. But and there was something that had come down to the church, like from the Pope or whatever, and I remember the priest standing up and talking about homosexuality was an abomination, and it was this and it was that and yada yada. And we came out and got into the car, and I've always encouraged my sons to be, you know, we're very open-minded. We don't judge people in terms of their sexuality, in terms of the colour of their skin, the religion, whatever. And my boy said to me, why did the priest say that? You said that it's, you know, it's perfectly normal to be. And I was like, I shut down immediately. I thought, that's it. Once this communion's over, bang, never again are we standing in a chapel. So I'm basically, yeah, that's been that. But I did it because for me, it was very much, it was a culture, it was an Irish thing, and it was about bringing together my family in Ireland as well, you know, with my sons, but they didn't make their confirmation. I said to them, if you want to do that, you do that. But do I go to mass and everything? No, not unless it's a funeral or it's a wedding. Absolutely not. I've known. And I yeah, that's because of, you know, just the things that I've seen and I've witnessed, and, you know, what you see in the world with the wars and people hating each other because of religion, yeah, is ridiculous. Yeah.
Let's go back to those nuns in your convent school.
Yeah.
Tell me about your years in school when you were sort of 14, 15,
yeah,
that type of age. What was it like then?
Well, I was in, at that stage, I was in, was it about second, third year of the St. Louis Convent in Monaghan. And it was predominantly nuns. I know things have changed now, and there were some lay teachers. And actually, I saw something online that just very recently that the St. Louis, the nuns, they're leaving. It's closing down. Like the school aspect's still going to be there, but you know the nuns are going. Which, in a strange way, if I was in Monaghan, I would like to, you know, there's going to be some sort of service or a mass or some sort of event, I would actually go to that, because, you know, for me, history and looking back and sort of remembering is very important. But yeah, so there was never any doubt that I was going to go to the convent, and I'm not sure why there wasn't, because there was like another school, the technical college, like in Monaghan Beechhill, which, but, you know, that was never like a thing. And that was, I was always educated with girls as well, which I think in hindsight, probably maybe should have, you know, been educated, you know, co-ed like with boys too.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, it was, you know, we had a maroon burgundy uniform. I cannot now ever wear maroon or burgundy. There was a whole thing in the winter just gone about, oh, burgundy was the new colour. I felt nauseous every time I looked at it. I couldn't. And I was like, I am not buying anything of that colour because it reminds me so much. But I would say broadly, there was no bullying. There was like, or anything like that, because we, amongst the girls, because we were bullied by the nuns. There was always that element, that underlying sort of little element of rage. And I felt, looking back now, of know-it-allness from them. And I remember, because people must have been aware, I think, that my mother was born into a different religion. And I remember, I was always sort of quite, I would question stuff. I remember I was a bit rebellious. I used to put, I remember, you know, in 1983, 84, like Toya Wilcox and, you know, people on Top of the Pops. And I used to backcomb my hair really high and spray it pink and stuff like that. So I was quite, and then if there was something that was on towards something that was going on, or that, you know, I felt was wrong, yeah, I would speak up about that. So, you know, my mother, God love her, was pulled into school. My father really didn't get involved in anything like that, so he never bothered with, you know, coming into the school for parents' evening or anything. But there was always that, well, you know, he's not true Catholic, not really. You know, just little sort of, but.
Was that ever said explicitly, or was it kind of?
It was hinted at, yeah. Yeah, it was absolutely. And then also I was, but it was a way of sort of like lessening me and you know, sort of, I suppose maybe in a wee way humiliating me. And, you know, I was heavy. I was, you know, quite fat, I suppose is the word that you want to use, you know, because, you know, I'm tall. So, you know, I was quite broad, but there was always that little thing to, you know, that there would always be little jibes like from the nuns about, you know, just, yeah, nasty, vindictive, low-level stuff. But, you know, I was bright. I was very interested in history in particular, and I was very good at history because we were a political family and we talked about stuff that was going on in the world, and we would always, you know, it's one thing that, you know, would always watch the news. We always got a newspaper, always very aware of things that were going on. And I did think at the time, I remember like when I was very young thinking that the only conflicts happening in the world were what was going on in the North and Six Counties and what was happening in Palestine, because that was our sort of like, and then being quite surprised, actually, this is all just, you know, the big wide world. I mean, it's different now. When I'm trying to explain that to my children, because obviously you've got, you know, the internet or whatever. But yeah, so I was very interested and I was very sort of like, and I knew like a lot of stuff and, you know, some of the things, certainly in terms of Irish history, aspects of how it was taught and things that were said that actually I knew weren't fully, it was a version of it. So I did get into trouble a few times for that type of thing, for saying, actually, that's not true. That's not correct. Yeah.
And how did that go down?
Not very well, because then, you know, I was sort of like, not so much identified as a, you know, a troublemaker or whatever, but just sort of that, because I guess it was like, they thought they knew everything. And, you know, certainly from a, you know, and that just whole way of being that we're all knowing and you have like, who are you to be sort of like having an opinion about anything, and questioning. So there was, yeah, a bit of, you know, argy-bargy.
Yeah. How did that treatment make you feel?
Oh, you know, I, at times I completely sort of like humiliated and embarrassed, and but at the same time, like, I knew it to be wrong, you know. And we used to get hit with the side of the ruler, you know, in the back of your legs, because we would wear tights, and you know, they would pull your tights down, like, and beat you in the back of your legs with that, and also like with the ring. From because, you know, nuns all wear like a wedding ring, they're married to God or whatever, and you would get that like on your skull. But yeah, that's what they did. And then I was always a great sort of like chatterbox, and because, you know, I had a lot of say, and which encouraging people to talk and actually be, you know, silent is wasn't, you know, how I was, because our house, obviously, there were so many people living there, was very chatty. But so I would, like, always yakking and talking. I was constantly getting moved around the class, you know, moving away from people, because, you know, I could sort of, you know, no matter who I sat beside, you know, if they were, like, somebody that was from the country or somebody that, you know, was from the town or whatever, like, I had, like, those sort of odd relationships with everybody. But, you know, like at 17, 18 years of age, and then they'd make me stand on a chair. That's quite humiliating, you know, a 17, 18-year-old girl.
Yeah.
And then, you know, because, like, I was heavy and that. And also, you know, we had some girls that left for a period of time because, you know, they got pregnant. And, oh, my God, the treatment of them when they came back. And just the general little jibes at some people, and, you know, because we had like some settled travelers, you know, people from the, you know, the traveling community, and they were treated atrociously, but they were my friends, and I didn't
I was going to ask about friends at school. Did you have the support of other pupils, other girls as friends at the time?
Oh yeah, there was, but they, you know, everybody was being, you know, treated, was being targeted, like for different things. So we were all in it together. There was no bullying amongst the girls, because we were all being bullied by them. And yeah, so it was just quite. But we did have some lay teachers as well. But you know what? I found some of them were just as bad and as vindictive. And you know, when I look at, I mean, the Irish language, for example, and the horrendous way that that was, like, literally beaten into us or taught to us. I now have gone back and I'm doing sort of, like, Irish language sort of, and, you know, going to the Gaeltacht or whatever. It's just a wonderful, magnificent language and the culture attached to it or whatever. But there was a certain amount of sort of, it was taught so badly. And also then even out there, like, within the sort of community, there was a wee bit of a sort of, like, in the 80s, a bit of a shame. Oh, my God, they're speaking in Irish. Oh, they're so embarrassing. Type of thing, which just, yeah, it's just, when I look back now, absolutely. But you know, it was the climate, it was the times. Ireland was a dark place, and certainly living in Monaghan, you know, there was stuff going on, you know, like with the hunger strikes and the just untoward practices that were happening both across the border and in Monaghan. Like, and as I said, my family were very were Republican, and you know, so we were dealing with that as well. But like, in, you know, school, I mean, I still have, my God, like, you know, my closest, my best friends, like, from school, I'm still
tell me about them. Who were your best friends at school?
Okay, well, there was my friend Barbara, who actually grew up across the road from me. So she was born in September of 68. I was born in October. And then we always went to the same schools. And so my family, I mean, there was like eight of them. So my family, my brothers and sisters were similar age to her brothers and sisters. Because in my family, my eldest sister, there's a year's gap between my eldest sister, the next sister, eldest brother, next brother. So like for the first six children, there was just a year's gap between each of them. And then there was a gap of like a few years. And then there's my two brothers, and there was only a year between them. And then there was 7 years between me and my next brother. But and it was, you know, the same sort of more or less, you know, my friend Barbara with her. So my brothers and sisters are, you know, still great friends with her brothers and sisters. And then my friend Maria, I met her. I sat down beside her on my first day in secondary school, and, you know, just last week, she's now great friends with my sisters as well. We went over to Holland to see my son, who's in university there.
Yeah.
So we're, after all of this time, still, yeah, and I still have people that I see from school.
Mm-hmm.
I go home and, you know, Maria will arrange, like, for us to go out for a meal and whatever, you know, and that's, you know, that's lovely.
Yeah, that is. That is that you've still kept contact. That's really good. Well, in terms of school, you said you did well, particularly with history. How did you do with your Leaving Cert and what happened, you know, the end of school?
My intro, I was absolutely phenomenal, and it's like, you know, bang, bang, bang. This is just, yeah. And then I don't know what happened with the my leaving. I was predicted four honours and I only came out with two. I don't know, I was going through like sort of a transition time, and just very, and I still, when I open those results, I can feel, and when I think about it, I can still feel that sort of stomach dropping moment. I was like, oh. And I often say this to my children, you know, that actually, but, you know, we all, you have to learn anyway. So you have to learn the hard way, you know, you just can't sort of like coast along. But my plan was that I was going to McGee College in Derry, which was a big deal because, you know, people, oh, you don't go to the north, like, to uni. Well, and I was going to be the first one in my family to go to, like, you know, university. And I was going to do Irish history, politics and society. That was the plan. Yeah. And then I needed the four honours and I didn't get the four honours. So it was like, okay, right. So anyway, I went then at that point to, I went to Carlo, RTC, the Regional Technical College as it was then. I was going to study accountancy because I was good at numbers as well. And then, you know, I went, that was strange going to Carlo because it was just, yeah, I wouldn't say altogether, it took me a while to get used to that. But I went to America then for the summertime with my friend Maura, who had aunts, an aunt and uncle in New York, and I had a brother in New York. So we went over together, and then we were going to be doing, I had sorted out these jobs like as just for the summertime that we were going to be sort of like nannies, housekeepers, and whatever. Mm-hmm. So that did, I was like 18, 19, yeah. And that, so I was there and I met a lot of Irish girls who were private duty, who were qualified nurses and were private mm-hmm. duty, doing private mm-hmm. duty and earning big bucks. And I went, okay, I like this, mm-hmm. kind of this. So I'm going to go back. I didn't go back to Carlo. I refused to come back. So then I said, I'm going to, so I said for the year, immigration then were after me and were threatening to deport me and actually wrote to me and told me that they were going to blah, blah. So I thought after a year, I have to, because I want to get back into America. So I had to come back. So my plan was then I was going to train to be a nurse. And we're better to train to be a nurse because the British hospitals, the Welsh, Scottish and English hospitals used to advertise in the Sunday newspaper, the Sunday Press in particular, which we would have always had in Monaghan for nurses, because you couldn't get into nursing in Ireland at that point. No. For love and money. Getting it, I know it sounds ridiculous, but to trying to get in to nursing or the bank, to get into work at a bank of all things, was just, it was like, oh, gold dust. And, you know, I remember people, and I say this to, you know, people now, you know, my nieces and stuff like in Ireland, is like, you know, when, if somebody got into a, like, they got the bank, can you believe they got the bank?
Yeah.
And now, because it's like, yeah, it's just a huge deal. Anyways, I then came back after the year, and that was my plan. So it was like kicking about thinking, what am I going to do? So I went to Dundalk College, RTC, for a period of time from like September up until like January, because I was going in February. Then I got into nursing because I needed to do something while I was waiting to sort of like this sort of like next stage. I went to Dundalk, which was great. And it's only down the road from Monaghan. Saw this advertisement for Bedfordshire School of Nursing in the Sunday Press, and then thought, I'll give that a go, and then applied for that. And I was in Dundalk, and my friend Sonia was with me. She was on the same course as me, and she I said, so I'm going up to Dublin, like to this, there's like sort of these interview things at this hotel. Yeah. And she said, oh, I'll come for the, you know, I wouldn't mind going to Dunn's, because you mm-hmm. really only had Dunn's and Penny's.
Yeah.
Although there was one in Dundalk, but, you know, the big Dunn's up in Dublin. So she came as well. She came to the hotel and I said to her, do you want to be interviewed? And she went, all right. And she got it as well. And they told me there and then. They were like, yeah, no, absolutely. You know, we'd love to have you. I'm like, okay. But then when we were being, we got our notifications, of which I then was sent to Bedford School of Nursing. She was sent to Luton and Dunstable. All the hospitals came under Bedfordshire. But, you know, that was fine. And I remember saying to my mother at the time, I don't want that. I wanted to be with Sonia. And when she said, you know what, it'd probably be the best thing, because then you go there and you're just with, you know, so you haven't, you know, sometimes when you go somewhere with someone there, you're sort of reliant on them and stuff. Because you still see her, like it's, you know, she said, I'm sure it's not that far. So I came to England, and that was on the 2nd of February 1989. And I started in the School of Nursing on the 4th, because I came the 2nd, I think it was Thursday or Friday. So I had the weekend, and I'd never been to England before. I'd never been on a you know, didn't know how to navigate like the train system. And I remember going to this Bedfordshire School of the actual School of Nursing, and then there was this the nurses' home right behind. I had to go in and wait for the warden, and this van pulled off outside. There's a white van, a Hayes van, and then the back door opened, and then these people jumped out, and this girl jumped out, and I was like, who are they? And it was a girl called Dipna from County Sligo, who is now still one of my best friends. And we see each other. She's living in Saudi Arabia now, but, you know, we're still sort of... I have my sort of, like, friends, like Barbara and Maria, like, still from school, and then, like, with Bedfordshire School of Nursing from 1989, you know, my friend Dipna, who I met that day, and then my friend Debbie, who I met the day after, who's from County Cork, still... You know, we are like very close and see each other. And, you know, Debbie's now, I lived in New York and America for years, and has now moved back to Dublin. And so, yeah, still very much in touch with them. But so that's how I ended up in Bedford, and then trained to be a nurse.
Yeah. How old were you when you arrived in Bedfordshire?
When I arrived in Bedfordshire, so that was 1989, I was 20. I was 21 then in the October. So I arrived in February. And then, so I was 21 then in the October
of
89.
And how long, well, are you still in nursing, or how long were you in nursing?
No, I trained to be a nurse. I qualified then in March of 1992. And the three of us did, and I worked then in Bedford, the hospital there, for full time then as a nurse, as a registered nurse, like employed by the hospital, up until September of 1994. At that point, after like 2.5 years really of like nursing or whatever, I remember thinking, and you know, I was only like 26. There has to be more to my life than this. There has to be more than, you know, I enjoyed the work or whatever, but it was just, I just felt I wasn't using my brain. And I still wanted, because actually when I had been in America that time for the year before I came back to Ireland to want to train to be a nurse, I had went to Westcon University in Connecticut and did some classes at night, because I've always wanted to learn. I've always wanted to, you know, like have my brain sort of like be challenged. That's how immigration got up, found out about me. But anyway, that's not about them. I thought, you know what? I'm going to go to university.
So I was going to ask if you did that.
It wasn't Bedfordshire University then, so it was like Luton University. I think it was probably the old poly or something. But there was a course for public policy and management. And I thought, and I remember looking at the criteria and thinking, absolutely, that's me. That's what I want to do. Yeah. So that's what I did. Now, my friend Dipna, the one from Sligo, she then had sort of fallen out of love, but just felt that she wanted to do something other than nursing. So she was sort of flirting a bit and was doing a bit of air hostessing, but didn't really sort of like enjoy that. So she looked at the course as well. She said, I think I might do it too. And I went, all right then. So we did, and we used to. So we both at this stage had wee cars, so we would share the driving up and down. That was, so we went there for 3 years. So what I did was, I left formally the employment of Bedfordshire, of Bedford Hospital, but then I was on their bank.
Right.
So I actually had more than full time hours. But I could choose when I was going to work, because I thought, okay, I need to see how this university malarkey is going to go. Because, you know, when you think of university, it's like, oh my God, I'm going to be studying all the time. It's going to be absolutely, you know, I won't have a moment to myself. But of course, in reality, as we know, that is not the case. I was actually doing more than full-time hours then as a bank nurse. And sometimes then I would be, ridiculously, you would be then employed by an agency who would pay you more to do the exact same shifts. I just don't understand why that happened. So sometimes then whoever was running the bank, if it was somebody I knew, they'd be like, yeah, you know what, we could, if you were doing this as an agency shift, you're going to get like an extra fiver an hour or something. Like, right, yeah, okay, put me down for the agency shift. So anyway, so there was a bit of that. But I used to work then, I would do, you know, days, nights, weekends. Dipner was a great one for working out exactly how many hours we had to do in a particular month before we would be taxed. And times like Easter, for example, because you had the bank holiday, the Friday, the Monday, you have Saturday rates, then Sunday rates. So she would, and they, all the bank holidays, she would have it down like, okay, if we did X number of hours for this. Yeah. So we used to do that like all the time.
That's but, brilliant.
It was just, yeah, so I worked all the time. I used to take off 2 weeks in the summertime and go home to Ireland and just lie about. That stage, my mother passed away, because when I went back to university in September of 94, she had died in June of 94. And then I used to go, can you believe it, the first 2 weeks or 10 days of every September, I would go over to New York to see my Debbie, who had moved to the stage there. So that's, I did that public policy, then in management, and then, you know, I graduated from there in 97. And then myself and Debbie went traveling for 6 months. And then I came back to Bedford. My younger sister was living here at this point. And then I got a job in a, I decided I didn't want to go back into nursing. I did some agency shifts, but I wanted to use my degree. So I got a job in a housing association as a community development worker. And my first day there, I came in and I sat down, and then this guy came in and sat beside me. His desk was beside mine. And I ended up marrying him, having 2 children with him, divorcing him. And he actually is from this and moved here with him because his mother and stepfather were here to help with childcare. And that's how we ended up,
Kara, that's amazing. I love the way how you've met friends and husbands sort of accidentally.
Yeah. I mean, I loved my time, my God, my early 20s in Bedford Hospital. Wow, wow, wow. We had such a fabulous time. And I worked in Bedford Hospital, and I also worked in this dingy little nightclub called Winkles that was like an indie sort of place.
Yes.
In the bar, like on a Thursday and a Friday, and sometimes on a Saturday night, and made such a you know, huge amount. And the memories from then are just incredible.
Do you think your return to education was because you'd been disappointed with your Leaving Cert results?
I think I'd always felt that sting. I'd always felt that sting, and also that I always felt that my Leaving Cert results did not reflect my mind and my intellectual sort of capacity and whatever, because, you know, so we grew up like a sort of like a, you know, and I've always been like an avid reader. And in fact, I set up a book club here in the village I live in, like about 12 years ago, because I wanted to meet like-minded people, you know, that, you know, in terms of, you know, in fact, we've got a meeting. I just sent the WhatsApp out about it yesterday. Our next one is next Friday. I think that 100%, but also I felt that there was more and I wanted to learn more and there was more to, you know, life. And in fact, after I, myself and my children's father, like separated and divorced, I went back and did a master's in my 40s here at Loughborough University in international politics. I came out with a first in it, and I thought, you know what, I've still got it. I still would like to do a degree. I still, you know, I still want to go back and do, you know, the Irish politics and society or language or culture that I didn't get to do when I was 18.
Yeah.
I still have that. In fact, my
That's
younger
still there.
My youngest lad is looking at, he's doing sociology in Sheffield at the moment, and he's looking at, he wants to do a master's. And we've been looking at McGee College in Derry. I was going, darling, if you went there, oh my, that would be my dream. I would live that for you. But I would still, yeah, no, it is, that's still very much. But yeah, no, I can still, and even now talking about it, I can just feel the sort of the burn of that sort of disappointment.
Yeah, it's obvious.
You know, my life, your life can go like one way or another way. And if I had went, you know, I wouldn't have went on to do the other things and have had
that.
Yeah. I would have still had great sort of experiences, met great people, but you know, not quite the ones that obviously that I have. But yeah, I really enjoyed my time doing that degree. And what I enjoyed about it, one of the things is that people say, yeah, but you'll never be able to earn the money, you'll never be able to work, and you'll never be able to pay your bills, and you know, you're not gonna be, how are you gonna study and work, like, you know, full time and this, that and the other, and actually defying all those expectations. Yeah. It was like, you know, I am, and I'm gonna do it on my own. Like my friend Dimna, you know, she was living with her partner at the time, you know, so she didn't have to worry about it. And he had said, you know, you don't need to worry about rent and whatever. But, you know, I had to. And I remember doing things like car boot sales and taking the money from that and you know, the 20 quid or whatever, and I actually go to Sainsbury's and then buying my food for the week, because if I didn't do that, then I wasn't going to. So that was... and then when I did my master's, I took a sabbatical from work. No, that wasn't my sabbatical. I took a sabbatical after my father died. That was, before. I actually took voluntary redundancy. I had, because I felt that, you know, I wanted to go back to university again. This is, it was like 2012. So I wanted to, and having people say to me, you're not going to be able to pay your mortgage, you've got two children, you can't be selfish. And I had people come to my door and actually say that I was being incredibly selfish and you can't do this because you're going to end up living on the streets and it's not fair on the children. And I'm like, no, I am going to do this. But then I felt that, but I did have sleepless nights. But the sleepless nights were caused by what other people were saying to me. But I felt, I'm a great one and believe it in your gut. And for me, it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to do it.
Yeah. What did your family think of what you did?
They were like,
education and the achievement of that.
You mean returning when I was in my 20s or in my 40s?
Yeah, and afterwards.
They were like, I guess it was, because, my mother, I think that when my mother died in the June, that really was it. That for me was the tin hat. I was like, I'm just going to do this. I remember having a conversation with her before and she said, well, whatever you think, if that's what you want to do.
You see,
she was the one, she would always say to me before, because, I was flaying around like as a teenager, what am I going to do? And she said, nursing might be good. Why don't you think about that? And I always felt... And I do, and I still look back and think, I actually went into nursing because my mother wanted me to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
She wanted, which is fine. And, it was a great, she did say it's a great career and, people will look at it very favorably. And she had been a nurse, but she had been a psychiatric nurse.
Yeah.
And I felt that, so I did it. And actually it did teach me sort of fabulous skills. And it did stand me in good stead. And, people were like, oh, well, okay, you worked in the NHS, you were a nurse, wow. But then going back and doing my degree, of course, they were it was like, of course, she's going to do that. Yeah, that's it. I don't think they thought it was out of the ordinary for me.
Right.
But back then in my 20s. Mm-hmm. But then in my 40s, it was do you want to do that for? Well, because I want to, and also I wanted to, a good example, in terms of my sons.
Yeah.
And it was tough at times, but, I spent, because then they would go every second weekend to their father, and, so I would spend the whole weekend, in the library. And I did get offered a PhD, because I did my thesis on French exceptionalism and, you know, politics and whatever. And I got offered to do a PhD for 3 years in Swansea to do with French politics or whatever. But I'd have to live in Swansea like 3 days a week and whatever. And, you know, I just at that point, I thought, no, because I had worked in the refugee sector and the experience that I had, like in my professional life, doing the PhD, it wasn't going to add. It was going to be purely for my sort of, and actually I feel that the Irish, even then I felt it was the Irish thing. I speak a bit of Italian as well, or, you know, Italian, doing something culturally in relation to that. You know, either of those, at the time they would have been sort of on par, maybe Italian up here, but now it's like Irish up here. So I, yeah, but, you know, like very proud there again. But at the same time, a bit like not really surprised.
No. One area that we haven't covered is, has really been your sort of social life, the things you got up to outside college, outside work. You mentioned a bit about in Bedfordshire. What can you tell me about your social life through your sort of years of 15 to 25?
Okay. So in 15, you know, at 15, I was like, that was about like 1983 or whatever. I was just coming into my own, I guess, you know, sort of like boys and all of that sort of thing. I did fall then very, very heavy. My sister, Detty, she married a guy called Frank, and then his brother, I sort of met and was just like, oh my God, was overwhelmed. I was obsessed for him, by him then for about 5 years. And, you know, we did sort of have, it was like sort of like very on and off and whatever. And then when it got to the point where he wanted it to be very permanent between us, I was checked out. It's like, no, it's a bigger world. I've been to America. and I was like, no, I'm not sort of, my mother used to laugh. She says, oh my God, could you imagine? Because I would spend a lot of, it was two things I used to do. I used to walk around with my bare feet all the time, which for some bizarre reason, people thought was bizarre, which I don't think. But, and I was constantly, I had a Walkman and I would listen, like, you know, to lots of sort of like music. I used to read a lot. Even then, you know, I remember, you know, my early teens, like reading books about, you know, politics and about, you know, the Libyan revolution, for example, in the late 1960s, you know, books about, I was very into autobiographies, you know, very into cinema and about like old 1920s, you know, 30s Hollywood. And I'm still very much into that, and film and stuff. But yeah, in terms of my social life, there was a couple of establishments. There was the Hillgrove, the disco. And it's just so Irish. On like a Saturday night, and it just, yeah, that was the focus all week. Oh, the Hillgrove, yeah. My God. Yeah. I'm going to get, well, my mother let me go to the Hillgrove. And then, like, we used to have then, during the summertime, there used to be the roller disco in the Four Seasons Hotel in Moran. That would be on from, like, you know, 3 o'clock until 6 on a Sunday. And then, you know, and then, like, during the, sometimes it would be on a Tuesday night, like, from, like, you know, 8 until 11 during the summer holidays. Like, oh, I mean, if, you know, if we could get to that. But very rarely would my mother let me out to that. But yeah, so it would be the sort of help. But, you know, I wasn't one to sort of like, I didn't go out drinking, you know, down the pubs or whatever beforehand. You know, would go like at 10:30. Unheard of now. I would never go out in a million years at 10:30 at night. not to start the night. And then I, you know, I would go with my usually a girl that lived next door to me, Claire or Barbara, and we'd walk up to the Hillgrove, and then I would meet, you know, like, you know, Maria or whatever, and then, you know, if he hadn't, God was there. And just, yeah, it was all very innocent when I think about it. I didn't really drink alcohol until I was about 19. And then, you know, I never really sort of enjoyed sort of, okay, you know, in my early 20s or whatever, yeah, I would drink more than I would, but it's not, it's just never, I've always, and I used to think it was a curse, but now I realise it's not a curse, it's something, it's a good thing. I've always suffered terribly with hangovers, actually, and now I think it's a real advantage because it puts me off that sort of extra sort of just going over. And so the hill golf was the big thing. And then, you know, the just hanging about. I was working then at that stage. I've been working since I was about like 13. My first job was washing dishes in a sort of wee Italian type of cafe in Monaghan until I dropped a load of plates one day in the middle of the in the middle of it on a Saturday afternoon, and I got the boot. I was told never to come back. I used to get a fiver a day, and you get a plate of chips for your dinner. And it was hard work. It was like, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning to 6 o'clock in the evening, and just on your feet all the time. But anyway, then I went to work. My friend Una, who lived down the road, she came up one day and said to me, would you come in and help out at a wedding tomorrow in the Four Seasons? And I was going, yeah, okay then. I was 13. And then, so I would help set the weddings up, serve the food, then clear up. And then it moved on then to great tradition in Ireland, dinner dances. You know, we have dinner dances on a Friday night. For lots of different things. And then, you know, for the during the Gaelic season, the Derry team, you know, various teams would like stop off, you know, so you would go in on a Sunday afternoon and you'd be sort of like, so it was wonderful. And that's where I mentioned her earlier, Maura. My friend Maura we went over to America. I met her, and she had like three sisters, became fast, just immediate friends with her. And so then we would, so that was a big part of my social life then, like in the Four Seasons, because the weddings, you could have two or three weddings on a Saturday in the summer. And then, you know, when that would finish, you'd go, you could go into the, when it came to the evening bit of the, you know, the food, and, you know, you'd have to stay to serve that, and then the dancing. Yeah. You know, that you'd be there, and that would be a social thing. But then myself and Maura, then very often, like if we were working on a Sunday, we would stay. Then Four Seasons used to do a disco, but that was for older people on a Sunday night. But we would still go to that. It was a wonderful time, and you know, very innocent, just so many ways. And then when I then went to America, because the way that I worked first of all for a Jewish family in Connecticut, and it was 7 days a week, essentially. I was like living there with them, and that was for, I don't know, 3 or 4 months. And then I went to live with an Italian-American family, who turns out had links to which I didn't realize before I went, but then subsequently became aware that actually there's something not quite right here. But anyway, and I didn't finish. You were off a Sunday and a Monday with them. So, but you know, I had friends and people I used to go and see down in Queens and whatever, but I didn't really enjoy that whole sort of Irish sort of bars type of, you know, thing in New York. It wasn't really sort of like, it wasn't really me.
Right. How about when you came to England, when you were doing your nurse training and working as a nurse? You mentioned earlier a good social life with that.
Oh, my God, yeah, it was wonderful, because there was just a huge amount of young Irish people that, you know, from the different, because you had three sets, like three intakes per year. So there was like the one in February, there was one in June, and then there was one in October, November time. I think it was, yeah, October. And then there was like young, all of the same age as ourselves. So you would have like last year, the year before, then this year, next year. And yeah, so there was a lot of young Irish people at that point coming through. And so we did have, and then within our wee sort of like within our sets, there was just like 12, 13 people in our particular set. And yeah, we just used to, you know, hang out and we would go. And then we discovered Winkles, oh my God, like this indie sort of nightclub. And it was just, it was a house, it was a terraced house essentially. And dingy, you stick to the football. My God, it was just wonderful. And the thing is then, like, when we'd be sort of like in there, there was one or two pubs that that were, and the guy was running, he was from Tipperary, and actually knew one of our friends, Nora, from, she was Tipperary, like, was in our set. And so we would go in there, and then, you know, got to know, we became regulars, and then got to know a lot of sort of the, you know, the English people, and people all knew then that we were sort of like nurses, and, you know, the lads, the lads would be gravitating, oh, he's a nurse. Yeah. Slowly, you sort of like inching their way towards us, like over the weeks. But yeah, it was stupendous. It was absolutely stupendous. And then working behind the bar, that was like a great way to meet people, yeah. So just, yeah, wonderful time. And then, you know, myself and Debbie and Dipna, we used to go away quite a bit. You know, myself and Debbie, remember we had a fabulous trip to Paris once. That she had a friend from when she was in school in Cork that was working over there. And going, you know, I remember we went to Tunisia. God, that was in 1990. That was January of 1990. And they were just starting out as a tourist destination. And it was... just, yeah, it was amazing, absolutely amazing. Never experienced anything like it in terms of, like, the culture, the food, and then just the attention, like, from the waiters and stuff. I went back to Tunisia. I brought my two boys when my eldest fella finished his A-levels. So a few years back, I think that was that about 2018 or something like that. Not one waiter looked at me. Not one. They were more, they were more interested in my son, my youngest son in particular, because he's got very blonde hair or whatever. Yeah. Then I see how this is going. But they're very, we did a lot of sort of, and then, you know, going, so when we would go back to Ireland, you know, over to fitness people in Sligo, we would go, the three of us, so, you know, Nora then maybe from Tipperary, go to see Nora, down to Cork. To Debbie's family, and yeah, we went to lots of places. We went to Amsterdam one weekend. We went just like a variety, and then didn't really sort of travel around England much. We used to when we first went over, because it's like, oh my God, you know, the Irish, sort of the hopes of Irish thing. We used to go quite a bit down to Kilburn in London, and we used to get the train down. No such thing as, I mean, you know, staying over or whatever. None of that. We would get the train in the afternoon down to London, and then we'd go Kilburn High Road, like, you know, the coal pits, Biddy Mulligan, you know, all the sort of Irish type of things. And then we'd go to the National Ballroom. And that's what I think of it. Some of the, I mean, it wasn't a disco run. It was like a band. It was real old school Irish type thing. Yeah. And And then we would get the last train back to Bedford. And then some of Debbie's friends from Cork had moved over then to the Archway, Road in London. So we went down a couple of weekends, and, you know, we'd go to Camden. Then one of my brothers, Harry, was living in Harlesden, and, you know, going down and, you know, staying there and seeing, you know, people like... Mary Coughlin and, you know, the Electric Ballroom in Camden and stuff like that. So yeah, it was a great time.
Yeah, you've mentioned an early boyfriend and other things later. Is there anything that you'd like to say about, you know, your own love life and experience? You know, during sort of 15 to 25, in terms of your sexuality, in terms of your experience in that area. You don't have to, but is there anything?
Well, when I met Aidan when I was like, you know, 15, 16, and I was then just sort of like obsessed by him, and then more obsessed than by, you know, his disregard for me at times. But then when it turned the other way, I was like, no. Anyway, so, but I was very conscious that, you know, I was heavy. I was conscious of my weight, I would say. And that, I do think, sort of like, what is the word that sort of just made me feel sort of not quite as confident as I absolutely should have been. And, you know, and then, you know, then I would be, now. And I think as well that having always been educated with girls, I wasn't too sure how to deal with boys, you know, even though, you know, my brothers or whatever, which are there, you know, my brothers. And my father was very much of his generation. I mean, he worked like in the, you know, the psychiatric unit, as indeed my older sister Maura did as well. So he did like 12-hour shifts. So he would do 3 days on, 2 days off, and you know that was the sort of the cycle, and then 2 days on, 2 days off. So, and then he was very much sort of like going. So he'd work like 7:30 to 7:30, and like his generation, then they'd go to, there was a pub called Liam Kelly's. They would go there for, you know, drinks with the men that he was working with. So you might see my father like for days at a time, and actually then. And I think, look back, and I think that, you know, he must have suffered with depression or whatever. We didn't communicate, didn't really have a relationship. Everything was always like in terms of focus, you know, in terms of my mother. And my mother was, there was obviously issues in their relationship, but, you know, I didn't recognize that at the time. So I think then that impacted then in terms of relationships like that I had with boys, and subsequently throughout my life, like in terms of men, that it just, yeah. But so Aidan was just, yeah, at that stage, like a great sort of, my God, I was just obsessed. But then, you know, I did have, you know, I didn't sort of like meet other people. And when I went to Carlow, you know, I sort of like had a couple of sort of very short term type of sort of, you know, boyfriends or whatever. But there again, I wasn't really, I didn't feel comfortable in my, yeah, skin, and then, you know, I would communicate, it was just a bit awkward. And then when I came over to Bedford, then, yeah, I did have sort of like, because men used to flock to us, but we didn't realise that, you know, this sort of core group of Irish girls, because, you know, yeah, we were just different to the English girls, you know, and then there'd be sort of these lads sort of sidling up, and we'd be like, yeah, what do you want? Or, you know, they'd sort of, I know, try and talk to us, and, you know, we'd be like, ah, you know, F off or some such thing. Yeah. You know, it was just, but because we were there just like having the crack, and we were sort of like very Irish in the sense that we were just out to, you know, have a good, I'm not talking about getting absolutely hammered drunk or anything like that, but just have a good time and enjoy ourselves, and, you know, weren't sort of like covered, you know, weren't like, you know, high heels, covered in makeup, and were just very different. Not that there's anything wrong with, you know, the women that, you know, were like that. Yeah. And even the girls like in our set that were English, like were quite sort of like different. And just wanted different things, you know. There's sort of very much like, you know, they were living with their boyfriend, you know, and they were sort of, you know, they had a dog, they were going to buy a house. So it was like, a house? What do you want to buy a house for? I mean, when I think back, I think, I mean, they were the wise ones, you know, that bought a house then. Because, yeah, they did, a couple of them did, you know, buy houses. And, you know, while we were there, it's like, why would you want to do to spend all your money on that when you could be out, like, traveling the world and having a good time and having the crack or whatever? So, but, yeah, I've only, in terms of sexuality, you know, I've never had any sort of issues there. You know, I'm heterosexual. I did think after I split up with my children's father, I was thinking it might be easier if I wasn't. women are just so much nicer. Nicer people. But I did sort of like meet, and then I did have like a relationship with a guy that was, you know, I met down when, because actually he was working behind the bar at the time. He was the one that got me sort of like the job, a fella called Andrew, who was English. And, but, you know, he was just not a good person. He came from, you know, his background, like his family life was just quite dysfunctional. Just really wasn't like a nice person. But then you know, my friends and whatever, and Debbie in particular, did try and sort of talk to me about that. But of course, you know, when you're so young and you're head up, you're thinking, well, you know, you're just jealous and, you know, this sort of thing. So, you know, there was a manipulation on his part of me and whatever. And, you know, and I'm very generous, like in terms of financially, you know, stuff like that. He took advantage of that. And, but, you know, it was a life lesson. And, That was that, and yet I still, yeah, there were, you know, other guys then that, you know, there was another fellow called Adrian, he was English as well, but, you know, he was more interested in smoking wakibaki, so that was like a non-starter, but I was very infatuated with him. And then when I was going traveling with Debbie after I finished my degree, I was then seeing this guy called Darren, who I was absolutely, you know, head over heels. I was like 26 then. I was in contact the whole time I was traveling. And then, you know, when I came back, it just didn't work out because, you know, just different people. Because I'm very, I think that someone that has got the same values and the same sort of outlook on life as me and, you know, interest in the same things, like in terms of the world and social justice, that's ultimately what I am looking for. And Darren wasn't that either, but our social life was magnificent.
Sounds good. Well, how would you say attitudes to, say, sex and contraception changed from when you were sort of 15 up until 25 and later?
I mean, in terms of
you and your friends. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, you know, like at 15, 16, I mean, you know, like sex, well, you know, certainly living in Ireland, like in the, you know, that early 80s, I mean, contraception wasn't even legal. And I remember when, you know, I was in Carlo, my friend Elian, who liked to think of herself as a bit avant-garde, she was repeating her leaving cert. She was from, like, I've been in school with me. Her family were incredibly wealthy, so she was at some posh place in Leeson Street and living in sort of rooms out in Rathmines. And I used to go and see her sometimes in Dublin. And I did find Carlo quite a lonely time. And I used to go and see her on a Saturday. And she, I remember going to the, what was the name of it? Was it HMV? It was the Virgin Megastore or something down there beside O'Connell Bridge, and they were selling condom, and there was a huge to-do about it. I mean, it was just absolutely nonsense when I think back to it, and the fact that, and then you had the church out shouting and screaming and condemning this and condemning that, and, you know, and the hypocrisy now when we look back on that, like in terms of them. But it was very, sex wasn't something within my sort of circle. Sex wasn't something that actually, you know, that people were actively doing. When I look at younger people now, and I'm seeing this through the lens of, well, actually, even, you know, with my sons, you know, when they're in their mid-teens, I was shocked by, you know, some of the girls that, you know, they would come to my, you know, I think I would never go into, you know, my boyfriend's house and into their bedroom when their mother was in the house. Just not, I mean, my God. But you know, times have changed and whatever. So there wasn't really. And then when we went, when I was living in Bedford, I mean, when I was then in Bedford, I then went to do my psychiatric placement. I didn't want to do it in Bedford Hospital. I wanted to do it in a different location. So I went out to an old Victorian mental health unit. They would have called it as a, you know, a mental health, what was it? A mental hospital, which, totally disgusting term. But, you know, it was one of those old, sort of out in the middle of nowhere. It was near Hitchin in Hertfordshire. And so I spent my time out there. So I met a guy there. And, you know, sex then was, you know, sort of on the agenda. But I wouldn't have discussed that or talked to friends about that at the time. Absolutely not. Those were the sort of discussions that myself and my friends had. Whereas now, with my sort of like friendship group that, you know, I have now here, certainly living in Barrow, like at my, you know, age, that it'd be sort of like more open, you know, in terms of...
Times have changed,
absolutely. But contraception, I didn't really... I mean, I went on the pill, I think I was about 21 when I was seeing Andrew Jackson, I can't remember, I must have been. and I was on it about 2 months and I couldn't stop crying. It was just horrendous, so I came off it. So I never used oral contraception, really, to be honest, because it just didn't agree with me. Things like condoms or whatever, I would talk very openly, you know, with my sons about, and absolutely, you know, you can't, and you make sure you get consent and you do this and you do that. That conversation would never have happened. I remember the when I got my period, and I never discussed that with my mother. And she then, you know, found my underwear, whatever, and then just came and said to me, handed me a packet of like sort of towel things and said, just take those, use them. And that was it. There was never any conversation. And even at school, I remember somebody and talking about the rhythm method. And because it was not accepted, but it was even then, it was like, well, of course, you'd only be doing this when you were married, but, you know, people get pregnant, you know, on this, and actually that it was seen to be something wrong. And the girls that went on, I remember one in particular, a girl that I used to be very friendly with when I was at national school, and she went off in secondary school and got pregnant, and then had the strength to come back and wanted to finish school. But she was absolutely humiliated. The nuns used to pick her out of assembly and bring her up and put her standing on the stage and be like, can anybody tell me what she's done wrong? This sort of, you're like, and then she left eventually. And it was, so it really wasn't, I wouldn't have been on my sort of like radar. But with the... I always wanted to be very and have been very open with my children about things and want them, you know, and I have two boys as well, talk about stuff. And of course they are male and they're not very keen. So very often I have to not beat it out to them, but force it out to them to get, you know, because I know that there's something. I am very, that's one thing, I am hypersensitive to people's feelings and emotions that are around me. You know, goes back to my childhood or something, I don't know. But the whole sex, it really wasn't sort of, and even when in my early 20s, you know, when we'd be in the nursing home, and I'd be like, you know, such and such, like, I think that she, you know, she had sex with whoever. We were just so innocent. But, you know, we used to bring, and, you know, I was talking to Debbie about, because we went away for a few days between Christmas and New Year to County Kerry. I saw Debbie about this, and we were talking back on those times, and she said that we were so green because we would meet fellas out on a night out, and we would invite them en masse back, because we all lived in one of the, we'd migrated from the nurse's home. We were living in houses then, and the nurses' like houses, and this one in Umbersley Road, and the four of us was in, myself, Dipna, Debbie, and Nora from Tipperary. And we would bring lads back to the house and we'd give them tea and toast and they'd think they're coming, of course, to have sex with us. And we're like, what? And then, you know, they might stay the night, share the bed with us. Yeah. And then if they attempted to do anything, we'd be like, excuse me, but we were so naive, when I think back to it, we could have been raped, anything, like, because in their mind, in these lads' minds, we're putting it out there, that's not what was in our heads. It was just perfectly, we were just very, I think, naive and just very, very innocent about that, and we were just so lucky that nothing untoward ever happened to any of us, because I'm sure for a lot of other people that wasn't the case.
No, that's interesting. That really is. Different times.
Totally different times. Yeah. Totally different times.
Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to add? We've obviously talked
about the time. My God, nearly half.
No, there's no problem with the time. But is there anything, particularly about your life between 15 and 25, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you'd like to add about that period?
I don't think so. I would say that it was, all I would say is that Ireland was a dark time then, you know, in terms of, and the immigration, and like all of my brothers and sisters, bar one, had all left home, Now, they've all, the majority of them have gone back, like, now to Ireland. And then that was very, and actually leaving and me going to America, me going to England, that was just accepted.
Yeah.
Just totally accepted. And that was what, there was no sort of big, and that was like, when I look back on it, like, just very sad. And I did find my mother after she died. She had like this wee, it was her address book. And you know, she would sort of, you know, be writing, you know, keeping an address. And right at the back of it, she had the dates of when every one of us left. When we all left home, which I remember at the time thinking, and when I think back on it now, that was just so accepted for her, that all her children.
And every child left. Every child.
Yeah. And the date that everybody went.
Mm-hmm.
Has she written them all down? That's like incredibly sad. I mean, you know, with my, you know, we did have, like, there were challenges within the family. Like, my brother, one of my brothers was, well, all of my brothers were involved in various things at various points. But, you know, one of my brothers was involved and he went away for a long time. And that really did, that changed overnight. But I was 12 when that happened, but that changed, like, the dynamic within the family.
Right.
But because then it just, like, stuff really got real in terms of, you know, what was going on. And I became very aware of some of the underhand tactics that were going on, like, in Ireland, like, with the, you know, the guards, the army across the border. Yeah, that was very tricky and challenging. But, you know, all of that's now been resolved and brothers out. And
it was a difficult time. A difficult time for your family.
Yeah, yeah. And that, and then also then, you know, being, I was conscious then of being identified then, you know, in terms of our family, that we were, you know, because we had, you'd meet people sometimes, you know, when you were, you know, at various sort of like functions or just out and about, and somebody would be like, I know your brother. Okay then.
Yeah.
We know what that means. I'm a friend of your brother's. Okay. Yeah. So that really was, that, you know, when I explain that now to my children, they're like, I just can't. They're just like, And when we watch old, you know, stuff on films and what, and, you know, some of the language that's used and, but yeah, that old thing, like, oh yeah, you know, or I'm a friend of your father's, that type of thing. So that was quite, that was a very challenging time. And then having to, you know, but, you know, we were very much still, you know, with my brother, that, you know, he was still very much part of the family and very much like, you know, that, so a lot of his visiting, you know, like, he would only get visits at certain times, and there was, like, we were campaigning because he didn't have a release date, and, you know, to get him and all of this. And there was, a lot of stuff going on there, and he was very much the focus of the family for a long period of time.
How do you think that affected you?
Well, you know, it had happened to him, but he had been involved in this, that, and the other. So there was, that was, and I think that, you know, certainly, you know, in terms of my mother, she couldn't get her head around it because she came from a completely different background. And I think that she blamed a lot of people in our extended family and for encouraging him and enabling him and give, you know, this, like, this romantic notion of, you know, of what she saw as, like, you know, Ireland, but actually the nasty, dirty reality of it was what we were dealing with. And then, you know, we used to get harassed sometimes, like locally by the guards and stuff or whatever, because of that. But then there was a lot of people like around us were involved, you know, and got killed and, you know, went to prison, and just awful, absolutely awful.
Difficult times.
Very difficult times. And I do remember the time like at the hunger strikes and whatever, and we were very active around Mon, and there used to be marches, and there would be, you know, this sort of thing. And then the day of the marches, my mother wouldn't let me go to school because she was be afraid then that you'd be caught, you know, coming, and you'd have to then join the march. You know, she was just terrified then that we somehow would be swept up and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think that
me in particular,
your own interest in history and politics?
Yeah, I think me in particular, because I was very interested in history and in politics. I used to follow sort of politics like all over the, you know, was fascinated then by British politics, and used to do stupid things, used to do bizarre stuff, like watch the, you used to have the live party conferences on BBC Two, and I watched them, watch these things. And then like in Ireland at the time, like the counts, you know, when we had an election, and there were some years we had like one or two elections, general elections, you know, and you'd sit and watch the count on the television. And that sort of thing, and listen to then, you know, an RTE1 on the radio on a Sunday. They used to have like the political sort of like, you know, and listen to, you know, and I think that she thought, okay, we're a bit of trouble here. We need to, you know, she'd sort of say to me about, I think that she was scared that I would become very wanted. And she would never say to my younger sister, you know, you're not going to school today, but she was afraid that I would get involved in No, that wasn't on, listen, 1983, that wasn't on my, at 15, really wasn't on my radar. I was aware of what was going on in the world, you know, and I wanted to be sort of politically aware of stuff, but not
to get involved in that way.
Not in that way, no. Yeah. And the irony now, like the, both of my children, they're very politically aware of stuff in there. And in fact, my eldest daughter did politics at university, is now doing a master's in Leiden University in Holland. And the younger guy, and they are very focused on, but, you know, because we've always sort of like talked about stuff. But
Do your boys consider themselves Irish?
Well, they're both of Irish names, Rory and August O'Sheen, and they're both of Irish passports, which in these Brexit times are a godsend, especially with Rory going to Leiden, because if he didn't have his Irish passport, he was using a British passport, then he'd need to get a visa, and then it's just all these hoops. And even going over to Holland last week, I mean, you just walk straight through on an Irish passport, and then there's all these people in this, you're like, oh my God, it was like 60 minutes was a sign up, so it was a 60 minute wait. But they do in the sense that they will follow Ireland, you know, like in terms of the football, you know, they're very interested in Irish history. Oisín, my youngest guy, is talking about maybe he'd like to do his master's in Ireland, he'd like to live in Ireland for a period of time. However, when the push comes to shove, they support England. If Ireland were playing England, they'd be supporting England. They're very sort of into like soccer, like football.
Yeah.
And very much like very, yeah. But Oisín now for his 21st, he wants to go to Cork because he wants to go and see a hurling match, which I'm delighted. He's taken, you know, some of his English friends with them and whatever.
Yeah. Oh, they'll have a grand time.
Hard English accents. We did go over to Ireland and lived in Ireland for like 3 or 4 months, like after separated from their father and after my father died. I took a sabbatical from work like for 12 months, and they Oisín actually started school in Ireland, and so they do have absolutely an affinity, and we go back a lot. When my oldest brother Seamus was 70, they're back in my godfather back in October, he wanted a day at the races in Leopardstown, so the whole family went.
Oh, that's great.
Him and loved it, and yeah, so but the yes, I think, depending who they're talking to, but yeah, they've got, you know, they're English.
Yeah. Right, well, that has been brilliant.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
That's been a great story, great journey to go on with you looking back at that. That was really useful, really, really interesting. thank you for doing it. I hope it's been okay for you.
Oh, absolutely. I was a bit worried at one stage because I could hear Oisín out in the kitchen rumbling. I thought he knows I'm on this. He'd better not come busting through that door. Yeah. But he didn't.
Yeah. Well, I've got a neighbour who's been drilling all week.
Okay.
So I have just been hoping that didn't start.
Yeah.
And so I've been fine. So okay. We were both okay.